Shudderiness is devoted to the most important and fastest growing segment of society. To those who know that the world's political, religious, military, academic, media, and economic institutions are corrupt. That they are counterproductive. That they cannot be fixed. Our mission, therefore, is to know who is working against our interest and to understand how and why they are doing so. Because exposing and condemning such schemes, even if they're religious or patriotic, isn't hateful. It's caring. In our concluding hour, we're going to use evidence and reason to continue to explore Paul's opening salvo, his letter to the Galatians, and to hold him accountable for claiming to be inspired by Yahweh while condemning everything God had to say. Our phone number, if you'd like to participate in this discussion anytime over the next 3 hours, and during our second hour, we're going to do sports in the news, and you're welcome to participate in that portion of our program as well. Our number is toll free, 877-300-7645. First item in the news struck my attention. Turkey, which is extraordinarily belligerent as a nation. You know, Turkey is the nation that as the Ottoman Empire at the end of World War I, lost an engagement to the Tsarist Russians. And when the troops had to come back with their tail between their legs and were not able to extract booty in the typical Islamic fashion, which would mean raping the women, enslaving them, bringing them back as sex slaves, and stealing the Russian possessions, they took their angst out against the Armenians and killed between 1.5 and 2 million of them in genocidal rage. Well, the world now is a world court. Happens to be the European Court of Human Rights, has decided that Turkey must pay 90 million euros, that would be 123 million U.S. dollars, for the damages that it inflicted on Cyprus during its 1974 invasion. The judgment is one of the largest ever ordered by the court. It said that the damages were compensation for losses endured during the invasion and the subsequent partition of the country between Greeks and Turks, between Muslims and Eastern Orthodox Christians. Cyprus has been divided since 1974 when Turkey invaded the north in response to a military coup on the island, which was backed by the government of Greece. Since then, the northern third has been inhabited by Turkish Cypriots, Muslims, while the southern two-thirds is by Greek Cypriots, Eastern Orthodox Christians. Turkey still has around 30,000 troops stationed on the island and is the only country that recognizes northern Cyprus as a separate entity. 30,000 troops there. Why isn't the world crying? I mean, why isn't the world saying you've got not only troops on the border, you've got troops in the country? I mean, the United States and NATO had a conniption fit over Russia marching troops in its own country along the border with a failed state that used to be part of its country. And here's Turkey since 1974 with its troops stationed inside of a country that it invaded. And not a peep from the condescender-in-chief of the United States. U.S. peacekeeping forces estimate that 165,000 Greek Cypriots, Eastern Orthodox Christians, fled or were expelled from the north, and 45,000 Turkish Cypriots from the south, although the parties to the conflict say that the figures are considerably higher. Today, most news agencies are going to be showing the pictures of the 275 or so Christian girls in the custody of Boko Haram that are now wearing Islamic regalia. A video distributed today shows that the leader of the Nigerian, and this says Islamist extremist group, they are not an extremist group. They're a fundamentalist Islamic group. Boko Haram saying that they're willing to trade the 275 kidnapped teenage girls. And by teenage girls, they're not all teenagers. Some are 12. The oldest is 15. They're going to trade them for imprisoned members of the Boko Haram group. Now, the imprisoned members of the Boko Haram group are incarcerated because they were terrorists, because they murdered civilians, because they burned people's homes, often with the people inside. And the from a Boko Haram fundamentalist Islamist perspective, these girls who are completely innocent should be used as pawns to release Islamic criminals. The video, which was obtained by the French ATP news agency, shows Boko Haram's leader, Abu Bakr Shekou, addressing the camera with an automatic weapon in his fist online, in his first online appearance since claiming responsibility for the mass kidnapping. This time he is not masked, by the way. He is sitting there grinning from ear to ear. In his previous video, of course, he threatened to sell the girls into sexual slavery. In another portion of the video, dozens of young women in traditional Muslim dress, yes, wearing the tents, being treated as if they were still living in the Stone Age. I guess it's a little beyond the Stone Age. The tents that they're wearing as if they're going back in time 1,400 years and therefore have no rights whatsoever, wearing tents. They were shown chanting verses from the Quran in unison, which means that the Muslim captors told these girls, you either memorize these Quran verses and chant them and put on the Islamic garb, or we will continue to torture you. These are Christian girls. Now, I'm not a fan of the Christian religion. But I'll tell you, what Islam is doing in this case is reprehensible. It is the a sad reminder that in Islam, religion is compelled. Approximately 150 young women can be seen in the video, which means about half of them. At one point, a single girl addresses the camera in front of the group, appearing nervous, and recites a Quranic verse. Welcome to the hideous world of Islam. Sheikhow addresses the camera in a different setting, appearing alone in his with his assault rifle and speaking in his native Hausa language. He asserts that Boko Haram has liberated the girls already, referring to many who he claims have become Muslims. I would assume that of the other 125 girls, that they refuse to play along, and that, therefore, they are being tortured. They're probably being raped, and they're being hideously abused for not being willing to become Muslims. He said, if you want us to release your girls that we kidnapped, which, by the way, he has no problem saying we kidnapped these little girls while reading from the Quran, because the Quran condones kidnap. Muhammad was a serial kidnapper. Those of them that have not accepted Islam, they are now gathered in numbers. Yeah, it's interesting. It was obvious to me that they showed 150 girls who said, all right, if you stop torturing us, if you stop raping us, we will put on the Islamic garb, we will memorize the Quran verses, and we will spew them out. But there were 125 that refused. That their dignity was worth more to them than giving the impression that they had surrendered to such evil. There were 125 remarkably courageous little girls. 125 little girls that are infinitely more courageous than any political leader in the world, especially Barack Hussein Obama, especially his wife that held up the little sign, "Return our girls." Imagine what these 125 little girls had to go through to refuse to accept Islam, the most repulsive religion in the history of humankind. We have Ralph, who's called in from Michigan, and he has a comment or question on the kidnapping by Muslims of these little girls. Go ahead, Ralph.
Well, it's both comment and a question. You know, number one is, you know, they've got white slavery markets going on over here in the United States where girls are taken off the street or out of homes right here and done the same thing to, basically, not by terrorist groups per se. And it doesn't seem like our government cares too much about that. But my main question is, you know, a lot of these Muslim groups are sitting there saying, well, we're not a part of that. We're fighting for our Muslim groups. When we fight, we fight for freedom of our people and so forth like that. And they try and separate themselves. Well, my question is why don't they take, and if they're so much against these terrorist Muslims, why don't they take and instead of trying to liberate something that doesn't need liberating, go over there and take care of that Muslim group that's doing it?
Yeah, let's talk about
politically correct here.
Yeah, let's talk about both situations. There is a slavery market that is worldwide. The vast preponderance of it is as it has been for 14 centuries, the direct result of Islam. Matter of fact, American slavery came into existence because of Islam. It was Muslims who managed it. The slave markets in northwestern Africa. That doesn't mean that all of the slave traders throughout the world or in the United States are Muslims. There are lots of thugs who get their jollies and make their living by taking advantage on, preying upon little girls. We'll be back in a moment. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We're having a discussion with Ralph, who was called in from Michigan, made 2 points. We're addressing the first of them now, which is that there is a great deal of sexual slavery that is being perpetrated around the world that isn't necessarily Islamic in origin. And it is true that there are men who abuse little girls who are not Muslim. You know, the movie that you've probably seen, most of us have seen, Liam Neeson's movie Taken, shows the ugly nature of the slave trade, the white slave trade. A disproportionate number of those girls do go to Islamic fiefdoms because slavery is legal in those countries and because it is impossible for the girls to be found and to be freed.
Can I interrupt just for 1 minute?
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Now, you said there's a lot of men out there. Well, let's not discount the perverted women that are out there, too, that are involved in this.
You know, I don't know how many women are engaged in enslaving girls and selling them into the sex slaves, but it's typically men that are engaged in it. But I will tell you that when you study Islam, one of the first things that you learn in the Islamic religion, that those who are abused most by it are affected by what's called the Stockholm syndrome, and they become the greatest allies of their abusers. And so Muslim women are the ones who, for example, sexually mutilate their own daughters. They're the ones who encourage honor killings of their daughters. So it's certainly possible. I would never give, and Ralph, this is the reason I'm glad you brought up the point. I think we have a tragic problem in America, and that is that liberated women, those who would call themselves feminists and who spend a significant amount of their time promoting women's liberation almost never speak out against the slavery. They never speak out against the 125 million little girls that Muslim mothers have mutilated. They don't speak out against the little girls who are murdered, who are flogged because they were victims of rape in the Islamic world. And that hypocrisy on their part tells us that there is really a serious problem in the judgment of women who will promote themselves as being liberated, who don't seem to care, have no concern over this. You know, Michelle Obama, to hold up a little sign, you know, return our girls, and referring to Boko Haram as a terrorist organization when she knows darn well that it's a fundamentalist Islamic organization, and that the reason fundamentalist Islamic organizations are running amok in the world is because her husband gave a speech at the beginning of his presidency saying that their religion was great and this was their time. So there is a huge amount of hypocrisy. Let's turn to the second part of your question, though, if we may, Ralph. You said that there are Muslim institutions that are speaking against the kidnapping. There actually are no credible Islamic institutions speaking out against the kidnapping. The few Muslims that are speaking out against it are knowingly lying, and they know for certain that most Muslims do not agree with them. You see, an Islamic institution cannot speak out against the kidnapping without besmirching Muhammad, which is the basis of Islam, because Muhammad was a kidnapper. Muhammad was a rapist. Muhammad was a pedophile. Muhammad was incestuous. Muhammad rewarded his jihadists with female sex slaves. All of his generals and the leaders of his militia were given special slaves, usually young children, to molest. So if a Muslim institution speaks out against Boko Haram, they have to condemn Islam and their prophet in the process. But the last part of your statement is really interesting. You've got enormous resources invested in military apparatus throughout the Islamic world, most of the weaponry provided by the United States. You know, you have Saudi Arabia as the sixth or the seventh largest military in the world in terms of expenditures. Why is it that none of them are willing to lift a finger to help these little girls?
That's an interesting question, isn't it?
It certainly is. What it does is it reveals the fact that Boko Haram is like them, that Boko Haram represents them, that Boko Haram is no different than the thugs who govern Saudi Arabia. I mean, look at Saudi Arabia. Every woman in Saudi Arabia is a slave. She's effectively a sex slave. She can't leave her home without her master going with her. She can't drive. She can't work. She can't do anything. She has no rights. She is nothing but a sex slave. And that's Saudi Arabia. So there's no wonder they don't go after them. So what do you think? The head of Boko Haram, Abu Bakr Shekau, says if you want us to release your girls that we have kidnapped, those of them that have not accepted Islam, and that's the only ones, I guess that's the ones that they are interested right now in releasing. They want to keep the ones that converted to Islam. We will treat them well, the way the prophet would treat any infidel he seized. Yeah, well, I can tell you, I've studied the Quran. I've studied the Hadith. I've written the most comprehensive book on the Quran and Hadith called Prophet of Doom. And I know how Muhammad treated the infidels that he seized. He had the men killed. He sold the children into slavery. And he and his men raped the women. So Abu Bakr Shekau can look the camera right in the lens and say that we will treat these women just as Muhammad treated the infidel women that he captured. which means that he is free to rape them. How do you like them apples, Ralph?
Well, it brings up an interesting question and kind of expounds on what you asked before or said before. My question would be then, if Islam's so great and they say they preach God, which...
Well, no, their God is named Allah. I mean, religious gods are all false, but in the Islamic Quran and Hadith, The God who is named Allah is modeled 50% after Muhammad's persona and 50% after Satan. So he's kind of a blend of Satan and Muhammad's persona.
Well, that makes more sense, because how can you take and justify any God, well, except for the small g God, meaning Satan, giving somebody 300 virgins to have as they will, to take as they want?
Yeah, that's the interesting thing. Yeah, the interesting thing about Islam is... Yeah, it's the actual number of virgins that are allegedly awarded to the Islamic jihadist who is killing infidels in Allah's cause, is never actually specified. The Quran says multiple, and Muhammad would say that if you kill a Jew, then you get bonus virgins. And so someone along the way added the number 72 to that, and I'm sure others have expanded the number over time. What the Quran does say is that the reward for killing in Allah's cause, those who do not surrender to Islam, is multiple perpetual virgins. And
I don't know how anybody could do that, because I've been married 41 years,
mm-hmm.
and I love my wife very dearly.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but
congratulations! That's a long time, by the way, to have been married. I'm about ready to celebrate my 30th anniversary. So, both of us married our trophy wives right off the beginning. Yeah, good job.
Well,
my wife tells me I'm authorized actually to say that, because my wife tells me that all the time that I was just smart enough to marry my trophy wife at the beginning.
What I was going to say, though, is, you know, being married to my wife for 41 years, and like I said, I've been very happily married.
Yes.
To have more than one wife, though, would kind of put me in a tismo, because I'll tell you what, sometimes, you know, she asks questions and stuff like that and says things, and I don't mean to be short with her or anything, but, when I ask the question to have an answer, and she gives me this song and dance. I mean, she tells me the beginning of it, the end of it, the middle of it, and what she felt about it and everything. I'm like, you know, I don't need the whole song and dance. Just give me the gist of the whole story, you know. And I can take that. And can you imagine having, what, 10 wives like that? I would absolutely go nuts.
Yeah, see, I'm verbose, so I'm more likely to appreciate the long answer than the short answer. Although I will tell you that we do have men and women, by our very design, have different interests. And so I can empathize with you in the sense that the stories that I find extraordinarily interesting that I want to give my wife the whole shebang on, she finds boring, and many of those that my wife loves to regale in with every possible detail, sometimes I have to feign enthusiasm. But you know, the reality is that I will agree with you. One wife is wonderful. I am delighted to have married my wife. I would have no interest in having two wives. I just don't know why two wives are better than one wife. But beyond wives, perpetual virgins are about conquest. And therefore they're about rape. The rape is not really a sexual act. Rape is a control act. It's an act of a person being to impose their will over another person and to be pleasured by the other person's pain. And so when you realize that these girls are going to be perpetual virgins, and therefore each time that sex is imposed upon them, it will be painful for them, you then get to the mindset of Islam.
Well, wouldn't that be considered a sadist? A sadist?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a sadist. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But sadism and Satan's nature would be quite similar. Muhammad himself was a sadist. Muhammad not only tortured many of his victims, he constantly engaged in rape. I think that when you are 50 years old and you have sex with multiple six-year-old girls, that is sadism as well. That is a disgusting, carnal, depraved, vicious imposition on the rights of children. And so Muhammad was a sadist. That is the reality of it. His God is sadistic. You know, in the Quran, the reason I say that that Allah is 50% blended as a caricature of Muhammad himself and 50% modeled after Satan, Allah spends all of his time in the Quran in hell. And he's not spending his time in hell as a guardian. He's spending his time as a hands-on torturer. And all of the tortures are sadistic. Allah is depicted pouring molten pitch down people's mouths, systematically ripping their skin off, and then giving them a new skin so that he can rip it off again. He likes to boil people alive. It is an extraordinarily sadistic image. And that's why Muslims, even today, they have no reason to live, only a reason to die. Life is miserable for Muslims. There is no hope. It's an extraordinarily destructive religion. It's why I'm so disgusted at the likes of President Barack Obama and Michelle Obama for their role in elevating the credibility of the religion, of touting the religion, of telling Muslims that this is their time and the United States will not oppose them, when they use that to commit such heinous acts. You know, in Syria, there have been more Muslim women who have been raped than killed. Yeah, so we're dealing with around 200,000 Syrian women who have been raped and about 150,000 Syrian women who have been murdered.
You know, that brings up an interesting question. You know, where is people's mindsets when, and I don't mean to get too intimate here, mm-hmm. you know, into the subject, but, you know, I feel good when my wife wants me for me mm-hmm. in a loving, caring way, and I want mm-hmm. her in a loving, caring way, than to take and brutalize.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, well, the idea of getting pleasure out of brutalizing someone is so foreign to me that when I'm confronted by what Boko Haram has done with these little girls and what the Mujahideen that America is arming in Syria are doing to little girls and what Muslim women do to their own daughters, which is to savage them sexually, that when you hear all of this happening in the name of this sadistic religion, if you're a normal person, if you're a person with good judgment, if you're a person that has any sense of caring for humanity, you've got to be disgusted about Islam. You've got to want to scream to expose it and condemn it, and also to expose and condemn those who protect the religion so that good Muslims can continue to brutalize others.
I do know this.
Yeah, go ahead.
I do know this. God says in the Bible to prove him, you know, and you got a lot of Christians running around, and you make that kind of statement, they all, you know, and I'm like, well, wait a minute, he says to do it.
The book, Ralph, is not actually called the Bible. It is the comprised of the Torah, prophets, and Psalms. But you are absolutely correct.
There's a lot of Christians out there that really get because they don't like
the Torah very much, and the statement that you're alluding to is presented twice in the book misnamed Deuteronomy. It's really from Devarim, which means the words. And in Devarim,
it's interesting because I'm trying to remember the guy's name. Was it Esau or the guy that wrestled Jesus Christ was born into the flesh.
You're talking about, he actually didn't wrestle Yosha. Yosha is his real name. There was no Jesus Christ, but Yosha is his name. And he didn't actually, Jacob is the person that you're alluding to.
He ended up with a broken leg out of it, but he still gets the blessing.
Yeah, what actually happened is that Jacob did the same thing Yosha would do prior to the beginning of his earthly ministry. He wrestled with Satan. He was wrestling with Shakar, which is the rising sun. It's one of the references that Yahweh uses constantly to Hasatan, the adversary. That's who Jacob wrestled with. It's who Yosha was asked to wrestle with. And it's because of the fact that Jacob rejected the offers of Hasatan for great earthly gain, just as Yosha had, that he was capable of inheriting the covenant. And so as a result, Jacob was renamed Yisrael as a consequence of that. Yisrael means individuals who engage and endure with God. We'll be back with Shattering Myths after the commercial break. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We're having a conversation with Ralph, who is called in from Michigan regarding the deplorable treatment by Islamic fundamentalists of little girls. And one of the things that Ralph mentioned in the last segment was that God, whose name, by the way, is Yahweh, encourages us to do is to test. Now, he doesn't ask us to test him, but he does ask us to test those who claim to speak for him. So if you were to deploy the test that he articulated in the 13th and 18th chapters of Devarim, Deuteronomy, to Islam, for example, in its Quran and Hadith, you would find that they fail miserably, that they are actually the antithesis of what they claim to confirm. But what's really interesting about all of this, Ralph, is that testing, the act of examining information and then processing that information rationally, logically, to come to a just, moral, and logical conclusion is the very thing that we aren't doing relative to Islam's role in the kidnapping of these little girls, that we aren't doing in terms of Islam's role in perpetrating 99.9% of terrorist acts around the world. That is really the problem. We have seemingly lost, and it's hugely prevalent among the religious. You mentioned Christians. It's hugely prevalent among the religious to be unwilling to examine evidence and then to make rational conclusions regarding that evidence. That's part of the reason we're in such a pickle.
You know, I have to concur with that. You know, I'm not the brightest bulb on the string, but I've come to this conclusion that logic, you know, can be derived other than through the world's intellect. Because when I see people of intellect, and I'm not saying everybody, I'm just kind of making a general statement here, I see they've lost something in it. Because their intellect, it really doesn't give them the insight that they think they have.
You know, let me comment on that, Ralph. Today we have we misconstrue knowledge for understanding. Scholars know a lot of things. Journalists typically read a lot and they know a lot of things, but they don't seem to understand anything that's important. The transition from knowing to understanding is the gap that most people, particularly those in positions of political, military, economic, media influence, seem incapable of making. And when you don't exercise good judgment, if you're not judgmental, which is, by the way, the principal crime of political correctness, being judgmental, but if you cease to be judgmental, if you can't process the information and form a rational, logical, moral conclusion, then you can't be moral. You can't be just. You can't be civilized anymore.
Right along with what, I think you're going right along with what Paul was saying, where he says we will judge angels one day. If you can't judge some of the simple things here on earth, you know, what makes you think you're going to be capable of judging angels one day?
Yeah, let me stop you there, Ralph. Everything you've said up to this point, we are on the same page. We aren't when it comes to Paul. In fact, in the third hour of my program today, I will devote that entire hour, as I have for each of the programs over the last week, to proving that Paul was a liar. Paul's letters condemn the very God he claims to speak on behalf of. And the very test that you speak of that is found in the Torah and Devarim Deuteronomy in the 13th and 18th chapters, when applied to Paul's letters, demonstrates conclusively that Paul, the founder of the Christian religion, was a liar when he claimed to be speaking on behalf of God. So I would hope that in days going forward, that you use your ability to still be logical and judgmental, which is a really good thing, Ralph. I think that's you ought to be admired for that. But I hope you use it to also evaluate Paul. In fact, let me give you a great website to go to. It's a 1,000-page book. I wrote it. I rewrote it, about a year ago. It's called QuestioningPaul.com. You will, because you like logic, you still have a affinity for reason, I think you will find it a worthy investment of your time. Well, that's it from Ralph today. I do want to thank him for calling. It is difficult today for anyone to stand up against what Islam is doing, because in this politically correct world, when you hold the religion accountable for the behavior of its most fundamental adherents, the world views you as hateful, when in fact what Ralph did is the most loving and compassionate thing that we can do, which is to expose those who are merciless.